And we're holding on to Samach Ches Amud Beis, the sixth line. We're in the middle of talking about, about the whole matter of Parnosa, which is the amount that's given to a girl for her Nadin, for her dowry. So we said in the Mishnah, that suppose a girl was, her father passed away and her mother or her brothers are arranging her wedding. So then we said that, even if they gave her what she decides later is an inadequate Nadin, where there's supposed to be a minimum amount, then she can demand that they give her it after all. And we talked about what that amount is. Rabbi Yehuda had said that you go according to what the father would have wanted to do. And we said in the Gemara that Shmuel holds the same way. And the Chachamim say that you go based on a fixed amount, which we said that, that Rebbe says 10%. So what we said so far is the default is 10%, but if we know what the father would have done, then he would do so, then you do whatever he would have done. Tosfos said earlier in the Masechta that that means specifically to go, actually not to Tosfos, earlier Rishonim bringing the same thing as well from the Goinim, that it means that if we know the father was more stingy, we can go below 10%, but we don't really have any source, they say, to say that we should go above it. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Habonos, as far as the daughters, Ben Bogru Adshalei Nisu, whether the girl became a Begeres before she was married, or Ben Nisu Adshalei Bogru, or they got married and then they became a Begeres, either way, Ibdu Mizunisehen, once they become a Begeres, or once they get married, then they lose their Mizunis, because Mizunis, we said, are Tnoi Ksuba. We learned in a previous Perek that the girls are entitled to mezonos, they're entitled to be supported by the estate until they become bogeres or until they get married, whichever one comes first. So they've lost their mezonos, v'loy ibdu parnasasan, but they haven't lost their parnasa. This one-tenth of the nechasim, or whatever the figure is going to be, they haven't lost that, meaning in other words, as we said, similar to what we said in the Mishnah, that even if she got married and didn't receive the proper amount of parnasa, she can still demand it and based in later on. That's what Rebbe says. The parnasa is not meant to be limited. Is not meant to be limited in terms of when she becomes a begeres or when she gets married. It applies after that as well. That's Divrei Rebbe. Reb Shimon Elazar Oimer Af Ibdu Parnasasa. Reb Shimon Elazar says that no, they've also lost their parnasa, meaning that he says the whole concept of parnasa, the whole concept of the 10%, is only if she's getting married as a tana or a naira. But if she's a begeres, had the father been alive, she'd already be out of his rishus. Therefore, by the same token, now that she's a begeres, she's lost that. And the same thing when she gets married, then she was willing to accept whatever they gave her for whatever the heirs, whatever her brothers or her mother or whoever it is gave for the Nadin. So therefore, if she doesn't protest and say that I want something else, then she loses it. Now, when she was a Ketana, then we're going to say that a Ketana can't be Moichel. Therefore, we would say that, that she still is entitled to it later on. So that's Reb Shimon Elazar. Kate said, hey, Narsis. So what do they do if they don't want to lose that, if they don't want to lose that privilege? They rent for themselves husbands, which means, in other words, what does that mean? You don't rent a husband. So Rashi explains, in other words, they arrange with people that are going to, who are going to marry them before they become a begeres, while they're still a tana or a naira, and then they arrange to get their parnasa through that. Because they say, in other words, listen, I already have a husband, and therefore, I need the parnasa in order to prepare for my wedding. And then in practice, they don't get married until they're somewhat older. Shittim Kubetzis brings from Tamidur Rabbeinu Yonah that to explain a little more detail that the vote is, in other words, we're talking about, they're not planning to get married as tanas, but they arrange with whoever their future husband is going to be that he should go now and demand the parnasa on behalf of his wife, on behalf of his future wife, who right now is a tana, and that way they're not going to lose their privilege later on. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Huna Hilchas HaKareb. So Rav Nachman says that Huna, meaning Rav Huna, they were chaverim, so he calls him by his first name. Said the halacha is like Rebbe. So as we said before, the default is 10%. Of the nechasim goes for the girl's nadin, and we talked about the idea yesterday that if there's more than one girl than each. Then so we start. We take 10% of the nechashim then 10% of what's left, and so forth until we reach and then if they're getting married all at once, we split that amount evenly among all of them. And if they're getting married one after the other, then each one gets more than the sister after her. However, Esrei Rava Lerav Nachman, but Rava asked Rav Nachman, how can you say the halacha is like Rebbe? We said in our Mishnah, we said that if the Yisoma was married off by her mother or brothers with her consent, so it's with her consent, but nevertheless she's a Tana, and therefore her consent doesn't count. The Kosvel of Meyai Bachemishim Zuz, they wrote that she gets a Nadin of 100 Zuz or 50 Zuz, and that's not anywhere near 10% of the Nechasim. Then when she gets older, she's able to take away from them what she's supposed to, meaning up to the larger amount that she's supposed to get. So Taima Diktana, so only because the Mishnah is talking about only because she's a Ktana, and a Ktana is not capable of Mechila, therefore we say that whatever she agreed to is not, we can't hold her to that. Hogdola, implying that if she was a Gdola, if she was a Naira, Vitra, then it would sound like if they gave her at the time a Nadin of 50 and she accepted it and didn't say anything, then it sounds like she was Mavata. It sounds like she was willing to forego the rest and she doesn't get it. So how are you telling me the halacha is like Rebbe? So Rav Shimon Elazar would fit better with our Mishnah, where he says that once they get married, if they haven't done anything, ibdu panasasan. But Rebbe, who says loy ibdu panasasan, then how does that fit with our Mishnah? And given that Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, we're not going to assume without some kind of evidence that Rebbe gave us a stam Mishnah like Rav Shimon Elazar, whom he disagrees with. And the answer is like Kasha, hod machoi, hod loy machoi. It depends whether she was moicher or not. When Rebbe says loy ibdu, and the halacha, and Rav Huna was saying the halacha like Rebbe, is where she was moicher. So she protested and said, you know what? You gave me a nadin of 50, but that's not nearly enough. I happen to know that the nechasim are much more than 500, therefore I demand more in keeping with that. So then we're saying that so loy ibdu panasasan means that because she was moicha at the time, then therefore she's entitled to that later on. Hadulay machoi. On the other hand, when she wasn't moicha, that would be when the Mishnah is talking about that, where the Mishnah is implying that as a naira, if she wasn't moicha. So then the Mishnah is saying if she's a Ktana at the time of the marriage, she doesn't need to be Moicha, because a Ktana anyway, we assume, is not capable of Mechila, but a Gdola would be capable of Mechila. So if she actually protests at the time, I'm supposed to be getting more than that, then we pay attention to that, and she hasn't forfeited it. But if she doesn't, then she has. That would be what we mean. Okay, and the Gemara says, Hachinami Mistabra. In fact, it's logical to make that distinction. So it's not just a distinction between whether she's a Ktana or a Naira. It's a difference within a Naira, whether she was Moicha or not. And you have to say that, says the Gemara, didn't claim Kasha the Rebbe of the Rebbe. Otherwise, after all, you would have a contradiction between two statements of Rebbe. The Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa, we learned it on Amud Aleph, Rebbe, a Batani Zonis Menachin, a daughter who's being supported by her brothers, meaning she's being supported according to the usual Tnoi Ksuba, that she's entitled to be supported until she becomes a Begeres or gets married, Netelus Isu Nechasim, that she gets 1/10 of the Nechasim, implying Nizonis Ein Shalom Nizonis Loi. So the implication is only because she's Nizonis, only because she's collecting Mizonis from them, which would be when she's a Ktana or a Naira. She doesn't get Mizonis once she's a Begeres. The implication seems to be that if she's not Nizonis, then she's not getting Isu Nechasim. So why is that? So yet Rebbe himself, in this Braisa that we just quoted before, says that Loi Ibdu Parnasasan, even if they became a Begeres. So what is it? Does she lose the Parnasa? Does she forfeit the Parnasa after she becomes a Begeres? Or not? So obviously the answer is Ela Lav Shmamina Hodimachoi, Hodolai Machoi. So obviously that shows that we do have to make that distinction between whether she was Moicha or whether she was not Moicha. So, and therefore that would make the difference. Rashi, interestingly, uses the expression im ba li nase ba'oda nizonis. If she's coming to get married while she's receiving mizonis, namely, which is a tana or a naira, so Marsha points out about that, that listen, if she already got married, then she's not getting mizonis anymore anyway, then that's the equivalent of a begeris. She would have to be mocha. So, and if she was a gola, she'd have to be mocha, and if she's a tana, then we're saying that she doesn't have to be mocha because a tana anyway can't be mocha. So therefore, that's why the Marsha and also Maram say that that is why Rashi carefully uses the expression that she's coming to get married, so she's not married yet, and therefore it makes a difference so she's still receiving the zonus right now, and therefore being that she's a naira, it depends whether she's mocha or not in terms of whether she gets the 10%. Okay, Shema Aminas to that group.
But she explained what she told that she can be moche. Maybe she doesn't know. She's too young. She doesn't know that she can.
Well, if she doesn't know, then I guess it's somebody's job. It's whoever's looking out for welfare. I mean, for one thing, we say based in Abiyan Shal Yisomim, that based in is supposed to stand in place of the father of a Yosem. So I guess if you have a situation like that, where the local bastion knows that whoever married her off, her mother or her brothers, gave her an inadequate nabin, then I guess they would have the responsibility to go and argue on her behalf, or to inform her at least that she should be mocha in order to be able to get it. So the Gemara says, Amale Ravina L'Rava. Amale Rav Adaba Ava Mishimcha. Ravina tells Rava that Rav Adaba Ava told us in your name, in your name, Rava, that the rules are as follows. Bogra, if she became a begeris, ena tzricha limchos, then she became a begeris, but she didn't yet get married, then she doesn't need to be mocha, because even without a macha, she's still entitled to the 1/10. Nisis, ena tzricha limchos. And if she got married, she's not yet a begeris, then she also doesn't need to be mocha. When does she need to be mocha? Bogra vin nisis. If she became a begeris and she got married, then in order not to forfeit the 10%, tzricha limchos, then she would have to be mocha. So the question is, mi amar Rava hachi? Did Rava really say that? That as long as she hasn't gotten married, she doesn't need to be mocha? Didn't we have before in the Gemara on Amar Aleph, where Rava had asked Rav Nachman from the case of a Yisoma of our Mishnah, where we said that only because she's a Katana are we saying that she doesn't need to be mocha, implying that if she was older, she would need to be mocha. The Shani Lay, and I'm not going to answer him, that in fact, the implication of our Mishnah, that if she's older, that if she's a Naira, she does lose it if she doesn't do something, would be, whether she's mocha, not on Amud Beis, actually, we just had it earlier on our Amud, a sphere of a lot of Nachman. So we just said that the answer was hod machoy hod lo machoy. So now all of a sudden, what are you telling me, Rava? What is Rav Adaba Ava reporting in Rava's name that in fact it doesn't matter as long as she's not both a begeris and married, she doesn't need to be mocha. And the answer is like Kasha. And the answer is there's no contradiction. Hod kamit zinaminayu hod lo kamit zinaminayu. It depends whether she's being supported by her brothers after she gets married. Now you can have, now as far as Tanoi Ksuba, they're only required to support her until she gets married or until she becomes a begeris. But you can have where out of the goodness of their hearts, after all, she's their sister, they continue supplying her mizonis after she gets married. So now, if after she gets married, where they're not even required to be supporting her anymore, nevertheless, at that point, if they didn't give her enough of a nabin, then if she doesn't say anything, even though she's not moicha, that would be this last statement of Rava, that in that case, then she hasn't forfeited the larger amount of the nabin, because she could have a valid claim. She could say, you know why I didn't bring them to Beis Din to demand my rights? It's because, listen, they're doing me a favor and they're supporting me now when they're not required to, so therefore I'm embarrassed to go and bring them to Beis Din. But nevertheless, I still have in mind that eventually, then I plan to demand that from them. as opposed to if they're anyway not supporting her, then we say that there's nothing for her to be embarrassed about. Let her take them to Beis Din and get what she's supposed to. And if she doesn't, if she's not Moicha, then she's forfeited it. So far, in other words, there's several different distinctions. So if she's a Ketana, we're saying that she's never Moichel on it, because a Ketana is not capable of being Moichel. If she's a Naira, and she's getting married, so then we say it depends whether, as a Naira, actually, she's still entitled to Mizonis. So then also we would say the fact that they're giving her Mizonis is they're required to, so that's neither here nor there. So therefore at that point also, so then we have what the Mishnah is implying that she's going to forfeit it, as a Naira. So that would be, if she's not Moicha, then she's going to forfeit it. Because as a Naira, she has every right to be Moicha. She's already a Naira. She's a Gdola. So therefore, she has to be Moicha. She'd have to protest that she gets more. And if not, then she's going to forfeit it. She can't say, I'm embarrassed because they're supporting me. Because after all, they're required to support her at that point. Once she becomes a Begeris, and she's getting ready to get married, as Rashi said before, as opposed to if she's already married, that's another matter. But if she's a Begeris and getting ready to get married, then it depends on whether they're supporting her or not, whether she's required to be Moicha in order not to forfeit or not. Okay. The Gemara says, Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rebbe Parnosa Eina Ketnai Psuva. Rav Huna says that Rebbe had said that Parnosa, this amount that she's giving, for the dowry, for the Nidunya, is not like the Ketnai Psuva. So we have to figure out in what sense. My Eina Ketnai Psuva. In what sense do we mean that it's not like Ketnai Psuva? Are you going to tell us that the difference is that if there are nechosim meshubadim, that if, suppose you have that, as we're going to discuss further on in the Gemara, suppose you have that her brothers inherited the estate, now they went and were meshabed some of the land that they inherited, which could either be, as the Gemara is going to discuss further on, it can be that they sold it, or it can be that they mortgaged it. We'll talk about that soon. Anyway, you're going to say that it means that Parnosa, she could even, in order to get her 10%, she could even take from those, as usual with a Baal Choyv, where after all, you have the regular case where Reuven owned property and then Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and then after he borrowed, sold some property to Levi. So the din is, we know throughout Shas that Shimon is entitled to take away the property from Levi to satisfy the debt, and then Levi will go back to Reuven and swear accounts with him. So you would say the same thing over here. The brothers were meshabed the land, they sold it, let's say, and now we're saying their sister is entitled to go and take that away from the buyers, but on the other hand, Tznoi Ksuva, in order to support herself, you can't do that. Now that, so Rashi explains like this. In principle, she ought to have been allowed to. But the thing is that the other Tznoi Ksuva, such as Mizonis, are open-ended. So therefore, Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam, there's a series of takonis that describes in the Sefer Gittin that the Chachamim made Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam in order to allow the world to function well. So one of them has to do with this. If we said that you're able to collect from the Shabbadim to pay for Mazin Ha'isha, Rahabanis, in order to support the Amana or to support the daughters, nobody would ever want to buy property because they're going to say to themselves, there's an open-ended commitment over here. How do I know at some future time they're not going to end up taking this property away from me to satisfy that? So therefore, I'm not going to want to buy it in the first place. I don't want the hassle. So therefore, if they took an oil, the Chum said you can't do that. On the other hand, Parnosa is not an open-ended thing. It's a one-time thing, and it's got a certain defined amount, 10%, as we've been saying so far, or possibly less than 10%, we said if the father was stingy. So therefore, a buyer is not going to be afraid to buy on that basis, because he knows that it's a one-time defined thing, and therefore he can start figuring out how much he can estimate the assets of the person he bought it from are, and therefore whether it's worthwhile over here or whether it's likely to be taken away from him. As opposed to by Mizonis, it's open-ended, you can't do that. So anyway, so you're going to tell me that Rav Huna is telling us that according to Rebbe, you're saying that Parnosa you can collect from the Shabbadim, but Mizonis you can't. In that case, my Kamash Mulan. In that case, what's the Chiddush? Hamaisim b'chol yom. We see this happens all the time. Mitzi in the Parnosim and Mitzi in the Mizonis. That we do just that. We collect from the Shabbadim for parnosa for the nadin, but not for mizonis. Now, Tosfos says, so, okay, so you know why it's common? Because Rebbe said it. So what's the Gemara's question? But Tosfos says, because the way that Rav Huna is phrasing it in the Beis Medrash, he's saying, Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rebbe, you should know, Chiddush. Rebbe said this, you know, implying that before Rav Huna said this, it wasn't even well known. And in fact, we're going to have further on in the Gemara where Rav Yechanan argues on it, and the Gemara is going to discuss whether Rav Yechanan even knew of the statement of Rebbe. So therefore, so if it's something that's being done all the time anyway, then Rav Huna doesn't have to tell it to us as a chiddush. So there must be a different meaning in what Rav Huna is quoting Rebbe as saying. So ev ela de ilo parnosa gavya nami minatalfli. So you're going to say that when it comes to parnosa, when it comes to the nadin, she's able to collect even from the metalflin that were left as part of the estate. Or tnoik suba memakarki gavya memetalfli le gavya. And you're going to say that tnoik suba, the support of the daughter or the almana for that matter, can be collected only from karka, not from metalflin. Because again, the life of ksuba itself, the shibud is primarily only on the karka. So you're going to say that that's what it is? No, can't be. The Rebbe Aidi Vaidi Migba Gavya. As a matter of fact, according to Rebbe, and after all, Rav Huna is quoting us in the name of Rebbe, he would say that both of them can be collected from Metalplin. Titania, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Echad Nechosim Sheyeshla Nachrayus, Ve'echad Nechosim Sheyeshla Nachrayus. Whether we're talking about Nechosim, which have Achrayus, which is Gemara speak for land, there's Achrayus on it in the sense, again, that if a person borrows money and then he doesn't have what to pay back, if there's karka that he previously sold to somebody else, then the debt can be collected from that karka. So therefore we call them Nechosim that have Achrayus on them. Or nechosim she'en la'en achrayus, namely metalplin, where you don't normally have that shibud. Nevertheless, motziyin la'mezoyna ishava abonis divrei Rebbe. Nevertheless, Rebbe says that you can collect. Now, even though also usually the rule is, when you're collecting a debt from yisoymim, usually the rule is you can't collect from metalplin. But here, when it comes to tnoi ksuba, when it comes to mozana ishava abonis, which are all tnoi ksuba, Rebbe says you can collect them from metalplin, even though those metalplin are now in the possession of the yisoymim. So therefore, so you can't say that Rebbe is making that distinction between that and between that and Parnassa, because if we're saying that Parnassa you can collect from them and Mizonis you can't, the fact is Rebbe is saying Mizonis you also could. And by the way, Tosfos says you can't say so. What are you going to say then? You're going to say that maybe the other way around, Parnassa. Rebbe would say that Parnassa can't be collected from a talpin, only Mizonis can. No, because if you can collect Mizonis from a talpin, all the more so Parnassa. After all, Rava said before that Parnassa shomin ba'ab, we figure out how much the father would have wanted to give for Parnassa, and we do accordingly, as opposed to Mizonis, where we're saying where that Rava himself says later on, only from Karka, so therefore we see that in a certain sense, Parnassa is stronger than Mizonis. So it can't mean. So again, if we're saying that Parnassa can be collected from, if we're saying that Parnassa can be collected from a Talpin, And you're going to say that Rebbe would say that Mizonis cannot, but we see in this braisa that Rebbe says you could. So Ella, my parnosa ain't a tanoi ksuba. So what do we mean? This expression that parnosa is not like tanoi ksuba. We mean lechadatanya. We mean in terms of the following halacha. Ha'omer al yozunu bnoisav minachasav. If a person says before he passes away, I don't want my daughters to be supported out of my property. Ain't shemin loy. We don't listen to him because that's tanoi ksuba. He has no ability to override that. So nevertheless, his daughters are going to receive mizonis until they become bergeres or until they get married, as the case may be. On the other hand, if he says, al yisparnus ubenoisav v'nechasav, but if he says, I don't want my daughters to have parnosa out of my nechasim, shem in loy, that we do listen to him. Shab parnosa in a ketnoi ksuba, because this is not like ketnoi ksuba, so he has the ability to override it. It's more of a choiv on the yisoymim. And therefore, if he's saying that choiv shouldn't exist, then therefore, then fine, she's not entitled to parnosa. Okay. The Gemara goes. What?
Parnassa, the difference with parnosa and mizonis in terms of assets is
that mizonis is ongoing upkeep of the girls, giving them food, clothing, other basic necessities. Parnosa is a one time thing. It is the nedunia. Well, the 10% or whatever the figure is, that's going to be given to them for their dowry when they get married.
But where does it come from exactly?
What? Parnassa? We learned earlier in the Masechta that there's a pasuk that recommend, where the Navi recommends to the people to provide a nadi for their daughters, so people will be willing to marry them. But nevertheless, it's not tznoi ksuba. It was never made as an official tznai of the ksuba. Therefore, the father has the right. Therefore, the father has the ability to override it.
Yeah, but my question is, the father has panasa, is an asset that's sold, or is it something that he gives on a regular basis?
Parnassah is not on a regular basis, that's what we're saying. Parnassah is a one-time thing. But so far, what we're saying is that in order to collect Parnassah, she can even collect it from the Shabbatim. That's what we talked about before, and we're going to continue talking about now, this question about if the brothers sold or mortgaged Karka, can she collect from it for her Parnassah? That's what we're going to be discussing about now. All right, let's go on. By the way, you're a little bit hard to hear, so I don't know, maybe you're too far away from the phone or something. But anyway, let's go on, and we'll see if your questions are answered as we go along. So the Gemara says, Tolole Rav le Rebbe beni chit. One time Rav wrote a letter to Rebbe, and between the chiti, he asked the following questions. Now, what is beni chiti? Rashi says it means between the lines. Tosfos brings that it means that he had a bunch of things to ask Rebbe, so he had like sheets that were sewn together, and between the stitches, he wrote this question. Now, why would he do that? So one possibility that Shetuba Kabetzis brings is maybe he realized afterwards he had forgotten, so therefore he stuck it in over there between the lines. On the other hand, Maharam Shif points out this was a period when he weren't yet allowed to write Torah Shabbat Peh. So therefore, he didn't want to write it openly, so therefore he wrote this question in the middle of. He has a letter of greeting that he's writing to Rebbe, just telling him, you know, asking how Rebbe is doing and discussing family news and whatever. And in between the lines or in between the stitches or whatever, he hid this question in order that he's not writing Torah Shabbat Peh openly. Anyway, Rav's question was, Ha'achen sheshibdu mahu. What happens if the brothers created a shibud on property? So what's the din? As far as what's the din? So that was all he wrote. So have a Yosef Rav Chiya Kameh. So when Rebbe received the letter, Rav Chiya was sitting in front of him as a Talmud. Omalei. So Rav Chiya asks, Mochru Mishkanu. So Rav Chiya asks, when my nephew Rav wrote you this question, what is he talking about? Is he asking about if the brothers sold Karka that they inherited, or is he talking about if they mortgaged it? Omalei, so Rebbe says, my naftamina, what's the difference? Bein Mochru Ben Shemishkanu, whether they actually sold it or whether they only mortgaged it for a debt. Either way, Metzian LaParnosa Bein Metzian LaMazonis. Either way, the daughter would have the right to take it away from the buyer or from the receiver of the mortgage in payment of her Parnosa, but not in payment of her Mizonis. So Mizonis, we said before, we have Mipnei Tikkun Olam, the Chachamim said you can't do that. But Parnosa, again, given that Parnosa is not an open-ended thing, it's a one-time thing, then therefore she has the ability to take away from the Chosim of Shabbat. So Rebbe is saying it doesn't make a difference what the kind of shibud was. So the question is, well, why did Rav phrase it so ambiguously, such that Rav Chiya had to ask? If Rav's original question was about the case where the brothers sold the property, then let him ask that. And if he's asking about when they mortgaged it, then let him write that. Either way, why did he write so ambiguously? And the answer is, in fact, Rav Tavayo Kami Barley. In fact, Rav was wondering about both, whether the brothers sold it or whether they mortgaged it. So Rav figured like this. E kasivna le mahu. If I write the question, what happens if the brothers sold the property? Then honichali isholach li the meitzin. Then I'll know if Rebbe answers me that the daughter could take it away from the buyers to collect her parnasa. Then I'll know kol sheken mishkanu. Then I'll know all the more so that would imply when it was only mortgaged. Where after all, when it's only mortgaged means it's still in the possession of her brothers. It's just the other person has a shibud on it. So all the more so. But yisholachli ein meitzin. But if I ask about mochu, and Rebbe answers me, the answer is that in that case, the daughter can't take it because it would be similar to Mizernis. Well, then, Akati Mishkinu Kamibayli. I'd still have the question, what about if they only mortgaged it? So therefore, I don't want to write Mahu. Similarly, Rav continues to think to himself, E kasivnaloi mishkanu, and if I only write that they mortgaged it, then again, then it's the other way around. E shalachli de'ein motzi'in, if he answers me that she can't take away even in that case, even though the primary ownership of it still belongs to the brothers, but nevertheless, if Rebbe were to answer that once somebody else has a lien on it, then he can't take it away from him anymore, well then, kol shekein mahu, then I would know that, yes, that applies all the more so if they sold it where they've completely lost their ownership of it. But he shalach li motzi'in, but if Rebbe sends back to me to say that you could take it away in a case of a mortgage, I can't be mahu coming by, there, and then I'm still going to have the question, what about a sale? Maybe a sale is different. So therefore, Rav is thinking to himself, whichever one I do, whether I write Mahu or whether I write Mishkanu in my question, either way, there's a chance that I may not get the full answer that I need. And the fact is, I'm wondering about both of them. Therefore, Echtev Leshivu, let me use the expression that they created a Shivu, they created a lien, the Mashmahachi, or Mashmahachi, where that can be understood either way, and then when Rebbe replies to me, he's necessarily going to have to reply on both. On all cases of Shibud, both Machru and both Mishkanu. And that way I'll have my answer. And in fact, as we said, that Rebbe answered verbally to Rav Chiya, and the Pashtus he wrote later on to Rav to say that yes for Parnosa, no for Mizonis, and it doesn't matter whether Machru or Mishkanu. Okay. Now, the question is, so now the Gemara continues, V'Rab Yechanan Oma Echad Zeva Echad Ze'e Mitzia. Now, Rav Yechanan disagrees. He said that either way, you cannot collect, from the Chosim Shabbatim for Parnasa. So unlike we were saying so far, we said at the bottom of the previous Amud, and we just had this story where Rebbe holds that for Parnasa, you can collect from, she can collect from the Chosim Shabbatim, Rebbe Yechanan disagrees. Well, Ibar Yavahu, so now the Chachamim had a question. Is it Rabbi Yechanan lo shnia lehod Rebbe? Is it that? Why is Rabbi Yechanan disagreeing? Keep in mind, Rabbi Yechanan is an Amora and Rebbe is a Tana. Usually, an Amora can't disagree with a Tana. So, is it that Rabbi Yechanan did not hear what Rebbe had to say? The shnia lehav makabalei, and if he had heard what Rebbe says, he would have accepted it and he would have retracted his own opinion. Oh, yom shnia lehavim makabalei, or maybe he knew of what Rebbe said and he still consciously disagreed with it. Which, how would he be able to do that, he being an Amora and Rebbe being a Tana? So the Rashba explains in one of his Trubas that the Gemara is assuming that Rabbi Yechanan might have had a different Braisa that supports his opinion. So, okay, Rebbe says one way, okay, but I have a different Braisa, which also is from the Tanoim, that says differently, and therefore I'm not obligated to accept Rebbe's opinion. Or would we say that if he knew that what Rebbe had said, then maybe Rabbi Yechanan would say, okay, I have a Braisa, but since Rebbe said differently, then I have to figure maybe the Braisa that I know of is mistaken or something, and let me follow them. So what is it? So Toshma de Itmar. So we can bring a proof from the following discussion. Misha mes v'hiniach shtei bonus or ben. Suppose that a man passed away and he left two daughters and one son. So now what happens? We know the son inherits the whole property, but the daughters, we said, are each entitled to parnosa. They're each entitled to one tenth of the nechassim. So what happens? The first daughter went ahead and collected her one-tenth for her nadin. The second one did not have a chance to collect before the son passed away. So now, the son having passed away, and he doesn't have children, we're assuming, then who yaushins the property? His sisters. Because that's how it works. If a man dies without sons, then his daughters inherit him. And if he had a son, and then the son died without children, then it goes back to his father. And his father already being dead, then it goes down to the next line, to the next one in the line, namely the daughters. So it winds up that the daughters inherit the property. So Amar Rav Yechanan, Shnia Vitra. So Rav Yechanan says at that point, the second one was Mevater. In other words, the second one has forfeited the Issur Nechassim. She didn't collect it yet, but she and her sister are inheriting the whole property anyway, so she doesn't need her Issur Nechassim anymore. And the discussion continues. Amar Rav Chanina, G'dolu Mizu Amra. Rav Chanina says, why do you even have to say that? Didn't the Chachamim say even a bigger statement than that? That a mitzian leparnosa ve'ein mitzian lemazonis. That the Chachamim said, as we said before, that Rebbe said that the daughter is entitled to collect for parnosa from the chosim mishabadim, but not mazonis, because again, tikkun olam. So how can you, Rav Yechiel, so in other words, he's saying that even when it's actually owned by the brothers, and they just created a shibur on it by selling it or by mortgaging it, you're still saying that she can collect from it. How can you, Rav Yechiel, be saying that in this case where the daughters inherited the property, that she shouldn't be entitled? Why shouldn't we say that, yes, she inherited the property 50-50 with her sister, but first we have to earmark 10% of the nechassim for her eventual nedunya, and then they'll split it evenly among themselves. Why should she forfeit it just because of that? If she doesn't forfeit it when the brothers sold it, when the brothers inherited it and then sold it to somebody else, why should she forfeit in this case? Now, the Gemara says, v'im issa, if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan did not know of Rebbe's statement, namely, man omra, Then he should tell Rav Chanina who says you're saying she's entitled to collect parnasa from the Shabbadim. Who says that's the case? So the fact that Rav Yochanan doesn't say that seems to imply that he accepts Rav Chanina's argument, not that he changes his mind, but he says, you know what, you do have a point. We have to find a reason to distinguish between the case where the brothers sold it versus where she and her sister inherited it. But nevertheless, the underlying idea that Rav Chanina is saying is correct, that in fact, if the brothers inherited the property and then sold it, she's still entitled to collect Isur from the part that was sold. So that would show, in other words, that Rav Yochanan did know of Rebbe's statement, but when it comes, now he disagrees with it, so because he holds there's a reason to draw a distinction. But if he didn't know of Rebbe's statement at all, then why when Rav Chanina makes this argument, then Rav Yochanan should say to him, what kind of an argument is that? You're bringing me a proof from the case where the brothers sold the property. That itself, you need to show me that that's correct before you use that as a basis to argue against my opinion where the daughters inherit. And the Gemara says not necessarily. The Dilma lo olam lo shmiyale. Maybe in fact Rav Yochanan did not know of Rebbe's statement. V'chi shmiyale kabil. In fact, if he had heard of Rebbe's statement, he would accept it and take back his own opinion that if the brothers sell the property, that you can't collect from it. V'shaini hosam. But it's different in this case where the daughters inherit. The ikar robach besa. After all, you have a much greater amount available in the household. Namely, she's not collecting only 10%, she's collecting 50% because she's yaushing the whole property. So you could say in that case, because he's collecting so much, then therefore maybe we could say she's mevater on her 10%. So the first daughter already received her 10%, we're certainly not going to make her give it back. But to collect a new 10% at this point, where she's already inheriting the whole property, that Rabbi Yochanan would say that she can't do. So maybe in fact, so Rabbi Yochanan might well distinguish between the case where the brothers sold the property and created a shibud on it versus where her sister and she inherited the property, even though conceivably you could say there's a similarity, because now you could say she has a shibud against her sister, but the difference is in this case she's inheriting 50% of the property.
Which when you say the sister's name is dead, there was no brothers involved?
I mean, so we said there was a brother, but then he died afterwards. He inherited the property, then he died, and now the sisters have inherited all of it. Tosfos, by the way, brings up an interesting point. So what about, for example, we learned before, you could have a case where there's 10 daughters, and each of them is getting an issue of what's left over, and in some cases we divide it up among all of them, in some cases each one gets her part. So you have, so most of them get far less than 10%. So maybe even all of them get less than 10%. We talked about yesterday, you could have where there's 10 daughters and each of them gets her Isser, each one an Isser being an Isser of what remains. So by the time we calculate it all out across 10 girls, we have about 65% of the Nechassim, and then we divide it up among the 10 of them and it's 6.5% apiece. Tosfos says maybe in that case, this Ravach Besa wouldn't apply. Why would you say she's not entitled to her Isser Nechassim? Because she's getting 50% of the property. Or if there's 3 daughters, she's getting 33%, etc. But maybe not once it reaches the point where anyway, she's only getting 10% of the property, and in terms of Nadin, in terms of Parnasa, she's only getting 6% or 7% or whatever it is. Maybe this din wouldn't apply. Tosfos leaves the question open. So there's not necessarily a proof from that one way or the other whether Rabbi Yochanan heard of Rebbe's din and consciously disagrees with it in the case where the brothers sold the property, or whether Rabbi Yochanan Bechlal did not hear of Rebbe's din. But he would say that in any case, whether we follow Rebbe or not, it's different when the daughters are inheriting the property. But if we're bringing up this matter of rovach besa, that once there's a larger amount of money in the house, then parnasa doesn't necessarily apply. So amalei Rav Yemel Rav Ashi elameyata. So by that logic, you're telling me once rovach besa is a consideration, then there's no parnasa elameyata. By that logic, ashkecha metziah ba'alma. What if the younger daughter found a metziah? What if she found a buried treasure or something? Deika rovach besa. All of a sudden now you have a lot more money in the house. Hachinami d'leyavin and la isur nechasim. You're going to say that she doesn't get her isur nechasim? Of course not. So why should it be any difference if she had? So what's the difference whether a windfall that she found a buried treasure versus a windfall where she and her sister are inheriting the entire estate? And the answer is Omalei. So Rav Ashi answers, "Ano rovach besa mehani nichsutamina." We're talking about rovach besa that comes from the nechasim themselves. So the fact that she found a metziah, that's a separate thing. That doesn't factor into this. That it belongs to her. It's not part of the estate. Therefore, we're not counting that. Therefore, that doesn't cause her to forfeit her isur nechasim. What we're talking about is given the isur nechasim is meant to be 10% of the nechasim themselves, then now, if instead of 10%, all of a sudden she's yarishing 50%, then we can already say that Rabbi Yochanan can already be saying that Shnia Vitra, that the second daughter has forfeited her Isser because she's inheriting the whole thing anyway. And not the whole thing, she's inheriting half of it anyway.
I know you asked the same question before.
Yeah.
There's Parnasa.
There's Parnasa and there's Mizonis.
Those are two countries.
Those are two. So Mizonis means
Isser is a third thing? Or?
No, Isser is Parnasa. When we're using Isser, we're saying before, we learned earlier in the Sugya, that Rebbe said the default amount for Parnasa is Isser Nechasim, is one-tenth. Unless, as we said in the Gemara, unless we know that the father was stingy and would have given less, and then we do less. But otherwise, the default is to assume that Parnasa, that the Nedunia, is gonna make up 10% of the Nechasim. Yeah, Mizonius is something else. Mizonius is the food and clothing and whatever that she gets on an ongoing basis as long as she's a Ktana or a Naira until she gets married.
Well, it all come to the same place.
Right, but we said there's differences. In particular, we said one big difference is Mizonius cannot come from Nechasim Meshabadim because we said Mepet Tikkun Olam. Because otherwise nobody's going to want to buy property because they know there's an open-ended commitment on it. As opposed to Parnasa, a one-time thing. The defined thing, that. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omer Amemar, Bas Yereshes Havya. Amemar says that this, when we say that the daughter is entitled to Isur Nechasim for her Nadin, that she's considered a Yereshes as far as that. It's considered as if it was a kind of Yerusha. Omer Rav Ashi L'Amemar, but Rav Ashi asked Amemar, what does that mean? Ilu Bari L'Saluka Bezuzi. Think about it. A Yerush is entitled to his share of all the Nechasim. You can't have, let's say, for example, when you have, let's say, in a typical case, when you have a bunch of brothers yarishing the property, one of them can't say to the other, you know what, each of us is entitled, let's say there's three of us, so each of us is entitled to 33%. You're entitled only to the money. I'll give you the whole estate. The whole estate is worth $1 million, let's say. So fine, I'll give you a third of $1 million in cash and go away. You know, I don't want to give you any of the fields or any of the other metal things. Can he do that? Obviously not. Each one has the right to say, I want for my part, each of the parts of the Yerusha. But over here, either boy la saluka bezuzi, if the brothers want to give her the one-tenth with money and tell her, in other words, you're not entitled to take karka for it, just take money and here's your 10% and go. Would they not be able to do that? If you're saying she's like a Yodish, that would mean they're not allowed to do that. Why ever not? Amalei ain't. And Amema says, as a matter of fact, yes. If they want to tell her that, she would be able to say that no, that she would be able to say, I'm entitled to take my portion from each karka or from each part of the Yerusha or whatever. What about Rav Ashi continues asking Amalei, and if they want to give her one particular field which will satisfy the Isur Nechasim, are you telling me that also they wouldn't be able to? And Amema says yes. She's considered in every sense like a Yodish. So she has the right to decide, like any other Yodish, where she's going to get her Isur Nechasim from.
I thought that the women, the sisters are not Yodish.
The sisters don't usually.
But they make the rabbanim made
a. That's the thing. So now Amema is saying, so we're going to end up schlugging up Amema, but right now Amema is saying that, that's how it is, that she is, yeah. However, Rav Ashi, Omar, Rav Ashi disagrees and says, no, Bas Bala Schoy Bhavya, she's not considered like a Yodesh, she's considered rather like a Bala Schoy. Now, when it comes to a Bal Choy, when a Bal Choy comes to collect, he doesn't have the right to say, I want to collect from this particular land or from this particular metalpin or whatever, unless there's a specific shibur on those. They can tell him, we owe you $1,000. Okay, here's $1,000 cash, and that's it. We're done with you. So the same way over here, Rav Ashi is saying, she's saying I'm entitled to Isur Nechasim. Good. They tell her, okay, so we'll take 10%, we'll take 10% in cash and give it to you. You're not entitled to any particular character or metalpin or whatever in satisfaction of it.
Okay, so I guess when it comes to collecting from Ziboris from different idiots.
So that's
what Ksuba, we know, gets the word.
Ksuba gets from Ziboris, right.
And if someone hurt Makir,
So Nezikin is from idiots.
Right.
So Baal Choyv is Bainless. No, but what we mean is, in other words, a Baal Choyv, after all, does not have the. So that's exactly it. A regular Baal Choyv gets from Bainless. But we don't say, if he's collecting from land, we don't say, for example, the Baal Choyv doesn't have the right to say, you know what, I'm like a Yodish. I want the debt that you owe me to be paid from such and such. No, it's whoever the people who are paying the debt have the right to determine what they're going to give him. If they're giving him land, they have to give him Bainanus. And if they're giving him anything else, then they can give him anything else. And he has to be willing to accept. So the same way over here, Rashi is saying the daughter to collect her Isur Nechasim is in the same situation. And the Gemara says, as a matter of fact, Amema also changed his mind and retracted his opinion that she's like a Yodish and agreed that she's like a Baal Choy. And we know that. I was standing in front of Amema. A woman came to him who wanted to collect her Isur Nechasim. The Chazise Ledaite. Now I could see that Amema's das. I could see like on his face or whatever. That if the brothers wanted to give her money and that's it. There's Isur Nechasim. You don't have any further claims. They would have been able to do that. So even though he didn't say it explicitly, what we can see. How do we see that? The Shami Me'achi the Havu Ka'amila, because we overheard, Rav Manyumi said, I overheard the brothers telling their sister, Ilu Havalon Zuzi, if we had money, Salikna Bezuzi, we would give you the money and that's it. So right now, we don't have that much cash on hand, therefore we have to discuss how we're going to give it to you. But otherwise, we would have preferred to just give you money and we'll keep all the karka and all the everything else. And the Ishtik, like Amalahu Vlaimidi. And Amema was quiet and didn't say anything in return. He didn't say to them, you know what, that's wrong. Which Tosfos, by the way, brings an interesting thing from that. It brings Rabbeinu Tam, when he was sitting as a dayan, suppose you have, sometimes you would have, one of the Bala Dinim would be talking to the other in front of the Beis Din and saying, you're going to end up owing me such and such. So now, Rabbeinu Tam said, based on this Gemara, if that's not correct, the Dayan can't be quiet. Otherwise, like we're saying over here in the Gemara, it amounts to the Dayan endorsing what the person is saying. So therefore, Rabbeinu Tam would right away jump in and say, no, that's not true, in order that people don't mistakenly think that he agrees that that is the halacha. So Dayan has to be very, very careful, not just with what he says, but also with what he doesn't say.
And when he says also.
Okay. So we see that Amema changed his mind. Now, the Gemara says, "V'hashta de'amet bala schoiv havya." Now that we say that the daughter, when she receives to get her parnasa, is considered like a bala schoiv, the question is, "De'aba or de'ach?" Is she considered fundamentally a bala schoiv against her father? Because after all, usually it would have been her father who supplies it, or against the brothers. Well, the question is, l'mayin nafka mina? Well, what's the practical difference? And the difference is, number one, there's two differences. The difference is like this. Number one, is she collecting from Beinanus or from Ziboris? We just said that a Baal Choyv usually collects from Beinanus. The truth is, the Gemara talks about elsewhere, Midaraisa, Baal Choyv would collect from Ziboris, but the Chachamim said, Shalotinol Delos, the Chacham didn't want. People are going to lock their doors and say, why should I bother lending money if I may only get Ziboris, the worst quality character for it, so therefore they made a Takana Beinanus. If she's, now on the other hand, the rule is, if you're collecting from the Chosim of Yisraimim for a debt that their father owed, then you can collect only from Ziboris. Then the Chachamim left it the way it was originally Minat Torah. So now the question becomes, if she's a Bala Schoiv of the father, and now the father passed away and she's collecting from the children, then she can only collect from Ziboris. But if she's still considered a Balas Chayv against the brothers, then she can collect from Benins. So that's one thing we need to know. The second question is, When a Balas Chayv collects from the person that owes him money, he doesn't generally have to take a Shavua that it was already paid off. Unless the other person claims in based in unless the loiva claims that I paid off, usually we don't require a shvua for the malva to collect. But when it comes to collecting from Yisoimim, you always have to take a shvua. So now again, the question is, if she's bal chayv against the father, then when she wants to collect the parnasa from the children, she needs a shvua that it wasn't already given to her. But if she's bal chayv against the Yisoimim themselves, then that's not necessary. Because she's their own Baal Chayv, so then it would be equivalent to them borrowing money from her. Where again, she doesn't have to take a Shavua in order to collect from them. So that's the question.
So let's say she's a Baal Chayv, why would you consider the two options?
So that's what we're saying. We're asking, is the Chayv something that was incurred by the father, and now she's collecting from the Yisoimim, therefore she can collect only from Ziburis and only with a Shvua, or is she considered that the Chayv only comes into play once the son's Yarish in the property, and therefore, then in that case, it would follow the usual rules of Baal Chayv. She could collect from Beinness and without a Shvua.
And if it incurred from the father, it's from when she married, or from when...
No, the Pashtus, it would be from when she was a Kanab, before her father passed away. Because eventually she's going to grow up and she's going to need this parnasa. So what's the din? So the Gemara says Toshma. Diravina Agbe Lebrate Dirav Ashi Mima Bre Dirav Ashi Beinis for Shalai Bishvua. It happened that there was such a case. Rav Ashi's daughter was going to be getting married. Her brother Ma Rav Ashi had inherited the property as usual. So now Ravina, sitting as a dayan, allowed Rav Ashi's daughter, Margaret Rav Ashi's sister, to collect from Beninus without a Shavua, showing that he held that it's considered a Choyv against her brother, not against her father. Had it been a Choyv against her father, against Rav Ashi, then we would say Ziburis and it would require a Shavua. Similarly, Mibreid Rav Sama, Breid Rav Ashi, Ziburis v'Shavua. On the other hand, there was a case where there was collected from Rav Sama, who was also a son of Rav Ashi, there it was collected from Ziburis and only with a Shvua, because Rashi explains that Rav Sama passed away while Rav Ashi was still alive. So now, when his daughter came to collect, so Ma'abar Rav Ashi, her brother, is still alive, therefore she can collect from him without a Shvua. But the other part of the estate, again, Rav Sama had passed away, so the other part that he inherited now went to his Yoshim, and therefore, to collect from that, she could collect from that only from Ziburis and only with a Shavua. So Rav Sama was the brother of Ma'abar Rav Ashi. There was a different explanation. There are Rishonim who learn that actually the situation was different. Rav Sama had passed away after Rav Ashi, but the point is that she was collecting from Nichsi Yisoimim part of it, and therefore that part had to be from Ziburis for the Shavua, but the other part she was collecting from Ma'abar Rav Ashi, we don't also consider that to be from Yisoimim, but rather she was able to collect for that from Beninis and without a Shavua. Okay. So the Gemara says, Sholach le Rav Nechemya Breder of Yosef le Rav Bar Avuna Zuta min Harga. Rav Nechemya Breder of Yosef sent the following message to Rav Bar Avuna Zuta from Nahavda. Rav Huna Zuta means the younger Rav Huna. So in other words, not the famous Rav Huna, but a different one. Anyway. Ki Asya ho Itzal Kamach. When this particular woman who's carrying this letter comes to you and she wants to collect Isu Nechasim from the estate, Ad Ba Isu Nechasim, may have her collect the Isu Nechasim, Afilu Me Itzrubla. Even from the Ixtrubla, which is, Rashi says, is the foundation or the base where a set of millstones sits on top of them. You have millstones for grinding grain. You have like a stand or a frame that they sit on top of to hold them in place. So even that is considered karka. And since we said parnasa can be collected from karka, then it means they can collect even from that. If they have to sell that Ixtrubla in order to raise money for it, then require them to do that. Similar, the Omer Rav Ashi, Ki Havein and Beir Rav Kahana, Rav Ashi says in a similar vein, when we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, as Talmidim, Havimak Binan, Afilu Me'amola De Basin, we would collect for the Isu Nechasim even from the rent of houses, because the house itself is considered karka, and therefore the rent of it is also considered karka. Tosfos talks about, what we mean is that, so the question is, what are we talking about? If the rent hasn't been collected yet, of course, the house is counter. And if the rent's already been collected, then it's a metal from like any other. So Tosfos says, let's say we're talking about, let's say the rental period was a year. Now the tenant's already been in there 6 months. So now, on the face of it, now, we have a concept in halacha that says, Shechirus ein mishtabanes elo l'vasoy. Rentals and things like that are only payable at the end of the term. So like you have nowadays, you rent an apartment and you have to pay the rent at the beginning of every month, but in halacha, really, it would be that you pay it at the end of the term. So if you have let's say, an annual lease, then you'd be required, from the point of view of halacha, to pay only at the end of the year one lump sum. So now what happens is then, so they haven't paid yet because it's still the middle of the year. They still have another 6 months until the end of the year to pay. That's when we're saying that even though half of it was already incurred during, because they've already been living there half a year, nevertheless, it's still considered, that part is still considered karka. We don't say when the rent is paid, only half of it is considered karka because the half that wasn't collected, that where they haven't lived there yet. No, we say the whole thing is considered like karka and she can collect from that. Okay. The Gemara tells a story. Shalach le Rav Onan le Rav Huna. Rav Onan sent the following message to Rav Huna. Huna chavrin shlom. Huna, our colleague, hello. That he's calling him Huna, his colleague, that the Gemara is going to say later that Rav Huna didn't like. Ki asya ha itzha l'kamach, when the following woman who's carrying this letter comes to you, ad the isu nechasi, give her a tenth of the nechasi. Well, have a Yosef Rav Sheshes kamei. Rav Sheshes at that point was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Huna. Omalei, so Rav Huna said to Rav Sheshes, Zil Emalei, I want you to go tell Rav Onan the following, and you should know, Vashamta Yehei Mandalei Omalei, you should know that anyone who doesn't tell it to him is going to be in Cheirem. I want you to tell him exactly the following words, even though it's said in a very insulting tone. I don't want you to worry about Rav Onan's covered. I want you to tell him exactly the words that I'm telling you. Tell him, Onan, Onan. Mimakauti, Oimimatauti. Are you talking about to collect from Karka or from Metalpin? And also say to him, Uman Yosef Be Marzecha Beresha, who sit in a base Marzecha, which the Gemara is going to explain soon, means the house of an oval, when they're eating a meal during the Shiva, who sits at the head of the table? Why he was asking that, we'll get to that second question soon. Also Rav Onan Lachamei de Ma'ufa, so when Rav Onan received this message, he went to Ma'ufa. And Rav Huna is kind of putting him down with that by saying, Onan, Onan, not just the fact that he's calling him by his first name, fine. He also said Huna Chavrin, but the double expression like that is like when you talk to a person like patronizingly, like, yeah, you know, you little kid, you know. So, he goes to Ma'ufa, who was the Reish Gobosa at the time. Omalei says, Chozi Mar, Hefi Shalach Li Rav Huna, Onan, Onan. Look, Rav Huna is writing to me, so is telling me a message. Sorry, I skipped a couple of lines. Also Rav Sheshes, the Kamedir of Onan, so Rav Sheshes went to deliver the message. Omalei, now he didn't want Rav Onan to be upset at him that he's going to tell him such a chutzpahdika thing. So he says, Omalei, Ma Rabba, you should know you're a great Tamil Chacham, but Rav Huna Rabbe de Rabba, but you should know Rav Huna is a far greater Tamil Chacham than you. Vishamusi Shamis Mandala Omalei, he said that anybody who doesn't give the following, if I don't give the following message, then it involves Chayim. And you should know V'ilav the Shamis Lahavakamina, Kaimina. If he hadn't threatened that, I wouldn't be telling you the following. But because he did, then I have no choice. Onan onan yimim kautim man yosef de mazeh b'reishah. So also Rav Onan l'kamei de ma'ukva. So Rav Onan went to complain to ma'ukva. Omalei chozimar hechi sholach li Rav Huna. Onan onan. Look what he sent me in such an insulting, patronizing way. Onan onan. V'oid marzecha b'sholach li lo yudainim. I knew. And also he asked me who sits at the marzecha, at the head of the table. What is a marzecha? Omalei. So the ma'ukva tells him, Emali izi, tell me, Izi, which there's two possibilities. In some places, Rashi explains that Izi means my friend. There's a Rashbam in Chumash that explains that it's like the word Eifoy in Chumash. Sometimes you have like me Eifoy who at Sodzai and other expressions like that. In English, the closest thing like that would be so or then. Like you might say in English, well then, tell me. So the Izi would be like that. Anyway, so Ma'ukva tells him, tell me my friend, or tell me then. Gufa de Ugda Hechi Hava. What exactly happened? What's the whole background to the story? Omalei Hochi Vahochi Hava Maisa. So Rav Onan tells him what happened. Omalei, so he says, Gavra Vla Yoda Mainu Marzecha. Sholach Le Rav Huna, Huna Chavrin. You don't even know what Marzecha is. How do you have the break type to call Rav Huna, Huna, our friend, rather than calling him respectfully, Rav Huna? So what is in fact my marzecha oval? What is a marzeach means an oval means that in the house of an oval you have the where the question was who sits at the head of the table. And we know that. We have a pasuk where Hashem tells Yirmiya, the Churban is coming soon. Don't go to the house of the Ovel to be Menachem, because anyway, soon everybody is going to be sitting Shiva over the Churban and over the loss of their relatives and whatever. And therefore, it's like nobody's going to be sitting Shiva anyway. So don't even bother going to be Menachem Ovel. Mind you, on the pasuk, actually, it actually brings from Sifri a different possibility that Marzeah actually means a party. And therefore, Hashem is telling you, don't go to parties because it's not a time for simchas. But the Gemara over here is understanding that it means an oval. So who in fact sits at the head? How do we know that the oval sits at the head of the table? Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Eov is talking, reminiscing about the good old days before his current tzaris. He says, everybody would always listen to me. He says, I would choose their ways. The Eshev Rosh, I would say, meaning in other words, when people would ask me, I would choose for them what the right thing to do. The Eshev Rosh, I would sit at the head. The Eshken Kamelach Bagadur, I would dwell there like a king among his army, where they all respect him. Kasher Avelim Yenachem, like the way that you comfort Avelim. So Gemara says, so we're saying Eshev Rosh implies that the oval sits at the head. But the Gemara asks, Yenachem Achera Mashma. The word Yenachem means to comfort other people. The oval is not the one who's comforting others; he's being comforted. Where do you see he sits at the head? So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok Yinochem Ksiv. So Rav Nachman Yitzchok says yes, but the way it's written in the pasuk can be read as Yinochem. So Rashi explains, if it meant Yenachem with a patach under the nun, then there would have to be an aleph after that to show that the patach is there. Since not, then we can read it as if it said, Yinochem, he is being comforted. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation at all. That's a big goichak. You don't usually find an aleph for that purpose in Pesukim. So rather, Tosfos says, the vote is, it could have said, Akasher Avelim Ninachem, where it would be clear that the oval was the one being comforted. Since it says Yinochem, then it has, and it means, in other words, the one who's being comforted, Yinochem, the one who's being comforted is the one who sits at the head, namely the oval. And then there are Rishonim, and we'll talk about other possibilities as well. How exactly we learn it. One of them is, it could have said, Kasher Yenachem Avelim, and it says Kasher Avelim Yenachem, so therefore that allows us to learn that means that the oval sits at the head. So that was the question that Rav Huna asked Rav Onan, and that's the answer. So by the way, what was going on over here with this whole thing? So Rav Reuven Margolius has a very interesting explanation. He says, Rav Onan was actually related to the Rosh Gavusa. So was Ma'ukva. And they had a concept where they could give smicha, not the real smicha, ishmitiyish, but a certain form of smicha that allowed a person to be called rab and to be able to judge dinei mominus and whatever in bav. Rav Huna did not receive that from them. He had an independent thing of it because he received it from rab, who received it from Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore now, so the family of the Reish Galusa, including Rav Onan, used to kind of look down on Rav Huna for that. Therefore he starts by calling him Huna Chavrin, implying he's only a chavr, he doesn't have smicha. So that's why Rav Huna took offense at it and sent this very short message with Rav Sheshis. And when he's saying who sits at the head of the table is the oval, he's hinting to him, you know what? Why does the oval sit at the head? Not because he's so particularly important, but because right now he's the oval, so therefore we give him that cover. You should know, Rav Onan, it's not you're a Rav in your hometown. It's not because you're such a chosh of a guy. It's because you were available at the time, basically. So don't put me down that I don't have the smicha, that I don't have your Reish Kabbalah's smicha.
It's also what you know, because he knew something.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. That's why he's asking him in that way, to show that he doesn't know, and to hint to him, like the only reason you're a Rav is because there was nobody better available, not because you're such a great guy yourself. He says also, in fact, when he says onon onon, the word onon itself is Rosh Tevis, is Rosh Tevis, Iser Nechosim Nigves. So is the Iser Nechosim being collected from Kauka or from the Talpin? And Rav Onan didn't understand that. He thought he's just calling him twice by his name, patronizing him. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off. Mazutra has a different pasuk where we see that the oval sits at the head. The pasuk says Besor Mirzach Zuruchim, a different Navi, the Navi Amos says that eventually there's going to be a Golus and the Mirzach of Zuruchim is going to go away. We doubt him. The word Mirzach means Mar Vizach, the one who's bitter and the one whose mind is distracted, namely the oval. Nasasar, he becomes the leader with Zuruchim. For the ones who are great. Sruchim literally means like the words, it can mean smelly, but no, the word serach often means something extra large, like the serach ha'oidit. So the people who are large and great, he becomes the sari, he becomes the leader over them in that he sits by the head of the table. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off. Two more lines. Amar Rava, Hilchsim and Makauti, Vlemetalpli, Ben Lamizoni, Ben Laksuba, Ben Lapanosa. The bottom line is, as far as all three things, as far as Mizonis, or the collection of the actual Ksuba, or Panosa, all of them you can collect only from Kauka, not from the Talpin. Although, as we've talked about before, later on, there was a Pekonis Agaonim that says that you can collect them from the Talpin. Okay, straight up, everyone.